Welcome to Planetary Spirit, coming to you on CyberStation USA. My name is Jeff Ferranini, and my co-host Magdalena is away on spiritual retreat. And so I invite you on an exploration of spirituality. And our guest today is Leontine Hartzell, who is a graduate of the Foundation for Shamanic Studies 3-year program in advanced shamanism and shamanic healing. She is a trained shamanic practitioner and shamanic counselor, plant spirit medicine practitioner, Yusui and Karuna Reiki master, a master teacher, a magnified healer, as well as a spiritual intuitive coach, psychic, herbalist, and ordained interfaith minister. And she holds a BA from Vassar College in comparative religion and studied religion and counseling psychology at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California. So it is indeed a pleasure to welcome today to Planetary Spirit, Leontine Hartzell. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Jeff.
It's wonderful to have you here. I know you're a friend of mine, Lorna DeMeo, and she is also a shaman. And, I've just heard about you in different ways. And actually, I took part in a New Year's celebration ceremony that you did years ago now.
Really?
I believe
in
Andover.
Oh, I remember. Yeah. Yes, that's right. It was a winter solstice ceremony.
I was so blown away by that. The honoring of spirit, the honoring of the indigenous energies, the native people's energies was just, and it was such a small group, but what I felt was if there were 300 people in there, you would not have done it any differently.
True.
And it was so honoring to the energies of the east, west, north, south, up, down, in and out. There was just so much power that I really took part in. So it is such a pleasure to have you here at the microphone and to just let people know a little bit about the path that you've taken and also perhaps some of the things that have happened along the way. So I guess the first question for me is, I mean, Vassar is it's one of the seven sisters. It's one of these, kind of well-to-do schools. You were studying religion and counseling psychology. That's very heady stuff. Where did you find your way into shamanism after you'd already been set up and you would have had no financial concerns whatsoever?
Well, the interesting thing is I studied shamanism in college, undergraduate, and read Mircea Eliade's book, Techniques of Ecstasy.
Uh-huh.
And back then, little did we know that shamanic training and education would be accessible without abandoning all and going living in a little hut in freezing cold mountain somewhere, which I have also done for short periods of time. And that attraction to indigenous spirituality and native practices and their connection with spirit was so compelling for me.
Mm.
And I was always a very spiritual person. Saw spirits when I was young. Didn't call them spirits because I didn't have that language. I was raised Catholic. I loved going to church because I could see the angels. But I didn't speak about it. And I always saw spirits. And in seventh grade, after months of deliberation, I went to my best friend, who's still one of my best friends, and I said, I think there's something wrong with me. I see these people. No one else can see them. They talk to me. We walk to school together in the morning. You know, I was a little concerned because I was reading a lot of books that maybe there was something wrong with me. She looked at me and she said, everybody has that.
Wow.
And that was the end of it. I was perfectly fine. She's an artist and a sculptor. She had no memory of that conversation, which changed my life.
Yeah, I could see why.
So, with that, blessing from her,
mm-hmm.
I I just didn't think anything of it. My advisor in college was a very mystical man. And I got into yoga and meditation when I was about 15. And one thing led to another, and I decided to go to seminary after college, thinking that I should be a minister and a therapist. But after a couple years, even the most liberal Christian denomination seemed too confining for me. I was too eclectic. So I left that.
You didn't fit the mold.
No. And I was trying to finagle something.
You were bargaining with God.
No, it was more, you know, ecclesiastical administration that I was trying to bargain with, and it just wasn't a good fit.
Yeah.
So I got married, and I had a number of children. And when I was going back to graduate school to finish my counseling degree, I was taking a number of spiritual workshops because I knew I wanted to have a spiritual kind of holistic practice. And one of the workshops I took was The Way of the Shaman, Introduction to Shamanic Journeying with Sandra Ingerman in Boston at the old Interface school.
Oh, my gosh.
And I almost didn't go because I thought, even for me, this is a little out there. But then I went, and after about an hour and a half of being there, and we had done our first journey to the spirits, I said to myself, it was a very strong feeling, finally, everything makes sense. Everything that had ever happened to me. The way I used to talk to my favorite tree, and my brothers would tease me, but I would secretly go and pray to this tree and when I was growing up and seeing spirits and all kinds of experiences I had had.
How old were you?
When I went to
the tree.
Oh, when I was going to the tree? Oh, my whole childhood.
Oh, 2 years old, five.
Six.
Okay.
To this one particular tree. But I used to have, I had many, many experiences growing up that, looking back, I can see, oh, I was talking to the spirits. I was seeing past life things when I would fall asleep at night and all kinds of things, which at the time I didn't know what was going on. You know? So when I took this shamanism class, I really felt like I had come home. Here at long last was a spiritual belief system that incorporated everything, and it made all my experiences up till that point make a lot of sense. So I ended up training very intensely in shamanic practices, first here in the U.S., and then in the last 5 years or so, I've gone abroad to also study with shamans, mostly in South America. And it's been a wonderful journey, becoming a shamanic healer and teacher, and writing 2 books about shamanism and spiritual healing. So it's wonderful. I feel very blessed.
So when you're talking about seeing angels now, it sounds to me like you're seeing angels that are embodied. They look like either children or they look like adults.
Well, not exactly.
Okay.
I'm remembering when I was about 4 and 5 years old, I loved going to church with my parents, because when I would walk in the church, I would see up on the high ceiling up there large groups of angels. They didn't look like they were in the physical body. They looked somewhat similar to a physical body, but very ethereal. And, you know, angels are very nice, and they just had such lovely energy. I love going there to just be with them. I couldn't understand why my brothers didn't like going to church.
Now, were they larger in size than a human being?
Some, yes.
Okay. That always gives me, I don't know, for some, I don't get chills, but I always get excited when somebody's talking about what their visual of something is. Had somebody who was on at one point, and she was talking about angels, and she said that they look more like orbs of light.
Yes, there are the orbs of light, yes.
Yeah.
But angels can also manifest in a form that looks very human,
mm-hmm.
that they can be perceived in that way. I'm remembering once, it's probably about 10 years ago, I was called to go to the home of a young girl, she was about 8, who was dying of brain cancer.
Mm.
And I said I would go and do some healing work with her and the family. I walked in their small house. The entire living room was full of angels. They were lining the walls.
Oh, my gosh.
It was quite something. They were deeply devout Catholic family.
Mm.
Yet, at the same time, they were also open to me coming. They had asked, mm-hmm, you know, that
mm-hmm,
I come.
Mm-hmm.
They heard of me through a friend.
Right.
And it was so beautiful that to have all these angels there. Now, the mother didn't see them. Perhaps the girl did.
Mm.
I told the mother later.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, of great comfort to her to know that all these angels were there.
Mm.
They lived in a very small town, and everyone in the town was praying for them. So it was lovely. You know, so when you see the angels like that, it's very touching. And because they're appearing in more of a human form, you can relate to it more.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, the orbs of light, they're actually different types of orbs of light. There are orbs of light that are elemental spirits,
mm-hmm.
nature spirits.
Mm-hmm.
There are orbs of light that are spirits, but they're not angels. And then there are the angels.
Okay. So like the fairies would be smaller orbs of light?
Generally, yes.
Yeah.
Balls of light.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They can be, fairies can be very small, and they can also be about the size maybe like of a golf ball or something like that.
Mm.
I don't think the fairies would appreciate being
considered a golf ball.
But about that size, and also can be colored. Fairy light can also have different colors.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Yeah.
Oh, I thank you so much for just delving into that with me.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just wondering for people listening out there who are kind of in that same place you were, this must be so refreshing for them to hear that there are places in the world where they actually fit in, where
mm-hmm.
when they get there, they will see that all the experiences they've been having have been leading them to this place, to this point in their life, and now it all makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
What a joy-filled energy that must bring you.
And little did I know the path I would take
mm-hmm.
be led down only one little bit at a time, am I allowed to see.
Sure.
But it's been truly wonderful and nothing I could have even imagined. I mean, back then, I couldn't even imagine being a shamanic healer and teacher, much less having the great blessing of being able to earn my living doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think being a teacher is really a special kind of gift to be given to you as well as to give to others,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it really gets to the heart of service. And
yes.
I think that spirituality, as Mother Teresa so well embodied, as Jesus so well embodied, you know, it's all about service. And I think Gandhi also, you
mm-hmm.
know, was very similar in that. And I just want to let people know that our guest today on Planetary Spirit is Leontine Hartzell, who has studied shamanism with indigenous, native, as well as contemporary shamans. And she studied with Michael Harner, Sandra Ingerman, Tom Cowan. And Leontine has taught workshops for the past 25 years and currently teaches workshops to children, teens, and adults on shamanism, on Reiki, on creativity, as well as meditation. And her website is www.eyeofeagle.org. EYEOFEAGLE.org. So are your books available on that website then?
They will be as soon as they're finished being written.
Oh, okay. I heard you say something about two books. I never saw any of them. So like,
they're not quite finished.
Okay, they're being downloaded.
Yes, they are. Exactly. Yes, I'm channeling them, and I'm doing my best.
Now, shamanism always has fascinated me. I know that Sandra Ingerman wrote a whole book about soul retrieval, and right. I know that this is something that you're particularly interested in speaking about. So could you let people know a little bit about what is this aspect of energetic kind of reunification or coming back together mm-hmm. that soul retrieval embodies?
Yes. So soul retrieval is a healing process that's actually been found in indigenous shamanic cultures around the world for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And it's based on the concept, the belief, that when something traumatic happens to a person, what can happen, doesn't always happen, but what can happen, is that part of that person's energy or spirit or soul leaves the body as a healthy self-protective mechanism. For example, if you were about to be in a head-on car collision, the last place you actually want to be is in your body. So part of your energy would separate out to protect itself. If all of you separated out, you would die. But if part of you separated out, then that part leaves the present moment and the event in order to preserve its energetic integrity, the purity of its energy. And most of the time, those parts become so separate from the person that it's very difficult for the person to bring or call them back on their own. So in shamanic cultures around the world for hundreds and thousands of years, it has been one of the duties of the shaman, the medicine man or woman of the community, to bring back any lost parts of a person's energy that may have separated out because of trauma. And this is a method of healing that is not found in any other healing modality that we have in our culture. Psychotherapy doesn't do this. Allopathic medicine doesn't do it. Even some of the more holistic alternative, so-called alternative healing methods, don't actually restore back to a person a part of their spirit or soul that's been separated out.
Not even in Ayurvedic or Asian medicine?
Some of that's very rarely.
Thousands of years old.
Right, yeah. Very rarely. Certainly those methods, in my opinion, can do are of enormous benefit, as well as can basically cultivate the garden of the human being so that the seeds can be returned to be planted to grow. And soul retrieval is a method where the shaman or the healer journeys into the spirit realm to find these parts of the person's energy that have been lost and brings back not a wounded, traumatized part, but instead brings back that pure essence, that pure energy that left, and restores it to the person.
So when you're saying that you're journeying or going somewhere to retrieve this, you're not doing this in the physical form. You're doing this in the spirit form.
Correct. I'm doing a spiritual journey into what we call non-ordinary reality, into the spirit world. And I have a helping spirit that works with me, that does soul retrieval with me. And that helping spirit does the work. I'm just the vehicle. My spirit teacher knows exactly what a person needs and takes me where I need to go. I know nothing. My spirit teacher takes me where I need to go. I find the soul part, and I bring it back.
So it's almost like entering into the dream state of sorts, only you're completely conscious.
Correct.
And you are being guided, led, and at times doing certain things on your own.
Right, correct. And this is the realm of shamanic work, of shamanic healing, that the shaman is someone who, and I don't call myself a shaman, I call myself a shamanic practitioner, but the shamanic practitioner or the shaman in indigenous cultures is someone who walks in both worlds. You walk in this physical, ordinary world as well as in the spirit world. And you are a bridge between the two, bringing healing energy, wisdom, and guidance from the spirit world and the helping spirits to the physical world for the benefit of others in the community as well as for the planet.
Mm.
This work can also be used and is used for balancing the environment and healing the earth as well.
So I'm just wondering, Leontine, if you could perhaps share with people today any kind of experience that you have had in seeing this work actually take place, and what was the person's condition beforehand, and what was the eventual restoration like for them?
I'm thinking of one example. I've done hundreds and hundreds of soul retrievals in the last 13 years since I was first trained, and I'm thinking of stories as we speak. One client, when he came to me, was very, very depressed and was on antidepressants, and he was not suicidal, but he was deeply depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did a soul retrieval for him. And afterwards, he always said, "I saved his life." And I said, "I didn't do it. The spirits did it."
Mm.
Because he had lost some very significant soul parts in two particular traumatic events that had happened. And afterwards, the depression had developed. And after the soul retrieval and one or two sessions to help his being integrate the returned energy and get used to using that energy again, he went off his antidepressants, which for him was the right thing.
Mm.
It worked for him, and he was still under his doctor's supervision.
Right.
And really had a major turnaround and was able to make, over the ensuing year and a half, 2 years, some good changes in his life and find a career that he was happier with. It gave him basically this enormous boost of energy because he was truly more himself than he had been previously. And people often say, you know, "I've never been the same since my mother died," or "I've never felt the same since that accident or this illness." And from a shamanic perspective, we always look to see, was there soul loss?
Mm.
Was there a loss of energy that when that energy is restored, the person feels very vital again?
So what does that look like to you as a shamanic practitioner when somebody comes in? How do you, I know you don't diagnose, but how do you make that connection that there's something missing here that needs to be restored?
Well, actually, I do diagnose. Well, not me. My spirit guides diagnose. I'm psychic. I can look at a person and see what's missing, where the energy's imbalanced, where it's blocked. But I have a spirit teacher who does diagnosis. So when somebody comes in to my office, I go into a short shamanic journey. I rattle and I go into the spirit world and I ask my spirit teacher, what does this person need?
Mm.
And then I'm told what they need, what exactly, what's the whole protocol for the treatment while they're with me.
Mm-hmm.
So each time it's individually tailored for that person. Maybe they need some extraction of an energy intrusion or removal of an energy block in order that when soul part energy comes back, they'll be able to really take it in and absorb it on a deep level. Maybe they just need a soul retrieval.
Mm.
And then they need a little energetic balancing. It varies quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wide range of shamanic healing methods that any shamanic practitioner would do. And I've had wonderful teachers in living beings who have taught me. My greatest teachers have been my spirit teachers, who have taught me many, many healing methods that no human being has ever taught me. And sometimes, you know, I was once down in Peru and I saw a shaman doing a certain healing method on somebody, and I was watching and I thought, I know how to do that. I learned that from these three spirit teachers, you know, 6 years ago. So sometimes I find healing methods that are known in other shamanic cultures, but just no person's taught me, so my spirit teachers step in and teach me.
So what was your path to meeting your guides? Well, that's weird.
That's my guides calling in.
Let's see if we can take care of that. Let's see. Yeah. I think that'll take care
that
of
it.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
Yeah.
So the way that I first met the first spirit guides that I met was in a shamanic journey. where by listening to a drum beat, a steady, monotonous drum beat, I was instructed to journey to what's called the lower world and then journey to the upper world and asked to meet a spirit teacher. So I'm lying down, my eyes are closed, Sandra Ingerman was drumming, and I jump up off this mountain in my imagination with my eyes closed. I visualize this, and I set my intention that I want to go to the spirit world to meet my spirit guides.
Mm-hmm.
And then I travel through space up into what we call the upper world. And there I saw a figure, and I met my first spirit teacher.
Mm.
Right. And then I had a conversation with that spirit teacher and learned a few things. And then there was a callback drum beat. So the drum beat changed, and then I knew it was time to turn around and come back the way I went. And that was one of my first shamanic journeys.
Now, when you're doing that, I mean, for me, and I think probably for a good amount of people, there's a skeptic that comes up.
Of course.
And says, well, you were just dreaming. You
right.
were just having this figment of your imagination. Why would you consider that to be something that would have any bearing on your waking reality?
Right. And over the ages, the reason that this kind of practice has persevered is because the wisdom that is brought through from these spirits, from compassionate helping spirits, not just any old spirit, but a compassionate helping spirit,
mm-hmm.
has been of such benefit to people to improve their lives and their health and their environment and their entire way of life and ability to relate to others as well as the earth, that's why this has persevered. I mean, some psychologists may say, oh, you're just talking to a part of your inner
mm-hmm.
wisdom, the
mm-hmm.
collective unconscious, as
right.
Jung would say.
Right.
In the shamanic view of things, we believe that these spirits actually exist. Some are ancestral spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Some are angelic or just higher realm spirits that choose to help us here on the planet who are in human form. They realize and recognize how challenging human existence can be. And so they want to help us. And there are some wonderful, compassionate, helping spirits. And at this time in this age of humanity on this planet, the star beings, which are spirits that are connected to the actual stars that you see in the sky, which are very high vibration beings. In my understanding, they are the closest to the divine source of all the levels of helping spirits. And they are coming through very strongly to a number of people to help us increase our vibration, increase our capacity to hold and carry light,
mm-hmm.
and to help us in the transition that Earth and humanity is going through at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been shamans who have been working with star beings for centuries. I've been working with star beings for maybe the last 6, 7, 8 years that I knew about anyway.
That I know about. I like that. And our guest today on Planetary Spirit is Leontine Hartzell, who has studied shamanism with indigenous, native, and contemporary shamans such as Michael Harner, Sandra Ingerman, Tom Cowan, as well as others. And Leontine has taught workshops for the past 25 years and currently teaches workshops to children, teens, and adults on shamanism, Reiki, creativity, and meditation. And her website is www.eyeofeagle.org. That's EYEOFEAGLE.org. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to download past interviews, go to our website at www.planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of your past shows. So, okay, now we're talking about the star beings, and I understand that you actually do star connection ceremonies. What is that about? How does that help ordinary human beings to connect with these powerful, energetic forces? forces that are here to help us?
Well, for the past number of years, I've been working with a large council of star beings who are my main spirit guides. And in this past year, they have instructed me to begin doing these ceremonies to help basically raise people's vibration so that our capacity to carry light with a capital L is increased, which also means that our capacity to hold our center in the midst of our emotions and thoughts and in the midst of a lot of changes happening in the earth is increased. And the more that we can hold our center, the more able then we are able to be fully compassionate and acting, speaking, and thinking from a place of pure compassion. So these star connection ceremonies are ceremonies where there's a meditation and the star beings are called in, and the energy of the circle of people that are there is opened to connect with the star beings, and then they basically download or bring down their energy, which then raises our vibration and expands the capacity of our DNA, which is in each cell, to carry light and to access wisdom.
Yeah, my understanding is that, because I had a guest on not that long ago who wrote a being that was channeled through what he called the founders. I think they're 12th dimensional beings. And he was saying it's kind of like a step-down transformer, mm-hmm. where when the energy comes right off of the telephone pole or the electrical pole, it's like 500, 600 amps, and to come into your home, I think it goes down to 200 amps. So there has to be a step down in order for it to be usable. Otherwise, you'd fry everything
exactly.
in your home. So part of this ceremony and part of this service is bringing that energy in a way that we can handle it.
Exactly. And people, if there's this one circle of people who are there for the ceremony, the people are, each person's going to receive the energy in a way that they personally can handle it.
Right.
And the whole ceremony is designed so that it's changed that way, so that the energy is really controlled, so that no one is going to get fried, so to speak. It won't be too much energy for one person.
So what has happened in your life with the guidance of the star beings that has brought you to an understanding that something other than what the five senses can contain is here, this is real, and this has been made manifest in your reality?
Oh, there's so many things. I'll give you one example. It's somewhat an answer to your question. one of the books I'm writing is interviewing indigenous shamans from around the world about their native soul retrieval healing methods. Hmm. So I had interviewed a wonderful shaman from Ecuador who I had heard about from somebody who had heard about him from somebody. And he had very emphatically, when we finished the interview, invited me to come to visit him in Ecuador. And I thought, well, maybe he invites everybody, you know. How do I know? What do I know? And about a year later, I was standing in my office in between clients, just waiting for the next person to come. And all of a sudden, I heard the three volcanoes that are in the valley, that make the valley where he lives, I heard them calling me, literally like a calling,
like a voice. Like a voice.
Yeah.
Were they saying your name or...?
They were saying, come. Mm. And I was a little surprised, even me, you know. And I hadn't thought about them in, you know, I'd heard about them once from him a year earlier. So I thought, well, isn't that strange? But then the doorbell rang and there was my next client. And then I go off into an altered state working with them. And I totally forgot about it until the following week. And the spirits had instructed me previously to leave this time open in the month of October for 3 weeks. Every time I tried to pencil in a class I would teach, they would say erase. I would hear a voice say erase that. You have to keep this time free. So I thought, well, maybe I'm taking a trip, but I had no idea where I would be going. And so after these, I remembered the volcanoes calling me. I went on a website of a woman I knew a little bit, who I knew went to study with these guys in Ecuador. And lo and behold, she was leading a trip to Ecuador in those 3 weeks in October. So I just called her up. I said, I'm coming. You know, I mean, it was sort of a no-brainer. And when I got there, this was last October, the experience of being there was so profoundly an experience of being home. I was just astonished. Every day, all day long, I would have deja vu experiences. And I just felt so at home there. And when the older shaman was, we were being initiated into work, there were four of us, being initiated into working with the different volcanoes. When he was bringing a message for me from one of the volcano said, at last you have come home. I have waited such a long time for you to come. You are like my sister, and I will teach you. And then she said some more things. And the tears were running down my face, and there were tears in the translator's eyes. And the older shaman and his son, who was translating from Quechua to Spanish, you know, their eyes are real big. And it was just such a profound experience of being led to go back to that place where clearly I had been before, to reclaim the wisdom that I had had in that life, in that lifetime or lifetimes there, in order to bring it forward. You know, there's a reason that I'm, you know, a nice white middle-class girl in North America. This is a really good gig. I mean, this is, it doesn't get much better than this. And there's a reason why I'm here now with all the resources at my disposal to be able to do the work that I came here to do. But, you know, in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been led to go to different places on the planet really to reconnect with the wisdom in those lifetimes that I had in those places. And it's all been arranged for me. There have been many magical things that have happened that have had these different trips fall together, and I've gone with the right people, and I've been brought to places where I knew where things were because I remembered from past lives. It's been very interesting.
Now, how does that relate to the star being energy, though? I don't quite get that. Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything. Okay. That's why I said it was partly an answer to your question. I believe that the reason that I've done this traveling that I've done and all the work I've done is to, as fast as possible, even though it seems rather slow to me, raise my vibration in this human life as Leontine Hartzell in order to be able to be a very good servant of the light. Because life is short. Time keeps moving on, and I'm not supposed to dilly-dally, because what I came here to do, to teach and be a channel for the light, is very important. And it took many years before I was able to start working with the star beings. 2 years before I started working with them, I asked, and I was told, you're not quite ready, but work on it. And so then I just kept doing all my spiritual practices, my meditation, my shamanic work. And then one day, a star being showed up in one of my shamanic journeys. And then more, and now I work with this big council and have for a while.
So you didn't actually get a no. You had to wait a little while.
Yeah, that was exciting, actually, the day that happened. I was in a ceremony, and one of my students was fully merged with her spirit teacher, and somebody else in the circle asked, can I work with the star beings? And this woman, I mean, she's fully merged with her spirit teacher, so it's not her speaking, it's the spirit speaking, turns to this woman, who's this big woman, and says, no, little child, you're not ready. And so I thought, well, I'll ask, you know, what the heck? So I asked, and I was told, like, keep working soon, like, you know, like, if you're good, if you really do your work, maybe you'll have that privilege.
Oh, that's exciting. It really is exciting. And, you know, I think that it feels like things are heating up on planet Earth. And I think the reason for not dilly-dallying, as you say, and that's a great word, is not necessarily for your personal energetic, you know, kind of manifestation at this present time. It's more for the work that you were brought here to do and you came here to do. And that so many people are needing to wake up and needing to raise the vibration of the planet. And that is why I do Planetary Spirit. You know, I feel that having access to people like yourself who are on that journey, who have dedicated their lives to being of service to something they don't clearly understand, but they are so in touch with a deeper part of themselves through doing this work that they know it's the right work to do. Mm-hmm. It's like when Picasso was asked, why do you paint? He says, I don't paint because I like it. He says, I paint because I must.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think that the teachings from the star beings, because it's of such a high vibration, and because there are groups of star beings that are the overseers of the planet and of the race, very compassionate, want the very best for us. They really want to see us human beings and all the other living things on this planet embrace our full potential and truly achieve a level of enlightenment, of compassion, of inner peace, of pure energy that is our birthright, is truly our birthright.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you know, that little thing called the ego causes such havoc. We forget, you know.
We forget who we are. We forget where we've come from. We forget why we came here.
Right.
Yeah.
And to truly imagine. You were speaking, but you asked me that about the shamanic journey. I never really answered. The gift of a human imagination is that then we are able to imagine something higher than what we are experiencing. It's one of the most magical things about being in a human body and having this earthly existence. If you can imagine it, then it's possible. Because if you couldn't imagine it, it wouldn't have a possibility in your realm. If you can imagine being enlightened, like being this blissful, purely compassionate, doing full service all the time, just and having a ball, just being totally full of bliss and joy, then that actually is a possibility for each and every single human being.
Mm. That's like the seed that gets planted, and then you have to keep watering it and giving it enough sunlight and good, rich earth. So doing all the other material things around it, but the seed is really the main component.
Yes. And you have to keep working on the ego and dealing with the complexities of being in a physical body and a physical planet. It's complicated. But the thing is that the ego itself creates such a tension because we want what we want, but we also want unity with everything and realization of our unity with God and all of life. And the tension that's created with the ego and that divine spirit within is what can propel us to really work on it. That's why I believe the ego was created for human beings to have, because it creates the tension that can push you. I mean, so, lots of people fall into the quagmire of it,
right?
You know, and I do too at times, but the more you work at it, the easier it gets to let it go, and then you find the bliss and the joy that's really there.
So it's not necessarily a bad thing, the ego. It can actually work as a motivator to move.
I believe so.
To move you into other directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good for people to hear, I think, because so many people are like, you know, I got to sit in this lotus posture and I got to crush the ego today. And, you know, I got to stop all the swirling in my mind and I got to get to that my happy place, you know. And it's like you just have to do the work, which is to breathe, relax, and allow yourself to let the truth surface and bubble
up. And you said a key word there, which is relax. Because I believe so strongly that the feminine energy of being receptive, which is relaxing, versus the more masculine energy of action, is what's required for us to cultivate in order for us to realize and experience that it's actually easy to let yourself open up like a flower and feel that divine center, which is the place of peace and joy and compassion. And the whole, I must stop my monkey mind from thinking, while yes, that's true, if you take a more relaxed attitude, which doesn't mean I'm going to go off on every 3 million thought trains that come up when I'm meditating, but rather I'm going to relax into the pure center of my being and let those thoughts float like clouds away in the sky. That's a receptive feminine place to be. It's allowing yourself to receive what's already there instead of driving yourself like a warrior to get to it.
Mm.
The warrior energy is important as well, but it's all about balance, of course.
And our guest today on Planetary Spirit is Leontine Hartzell, who has studied shamanism with indigenous, native, and contemporary shamans such as Michael Harner, Sandra Ingerman, Tom Cowan. And Leontine has taught workshops for the past 25 years and currently teaches workshops to children, teens, and adults on shamanism, Reiki, creativity, as well as meditation. And her website is www.eyeofeagle.org. That's www.eyeofeagle.org. So how did Eye of the Eagle come about?
One of my main spirit guides is this wonderful eagle, and I don't usually say that in public, but it's anybody who knows me knows this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my eagle's idea, actually. I teach a 2-year shamanic training program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to teach the 5th 2-year shamanic training program starting this November. And it's teaching people to be shamanic healers and shamanic practitioners. And I needed a nice name for it. So I went to my spirit teachers and I said, what would be a good name? And they said, Eye of Eagle, Eye of the Eagle. And I thought, I really like that. And it's wonderful because when you think about how an eagle is able to see, such incredible vision, it's all about vision. And this goes back to what I was saying about imagination.
Mm-hmm.
If you can imagine a world of peace, if you can imagine a planet that's environmentally balanced, then it's possible. And so to have that vision, that eye of the eagle, is what we're really all about, is to elevate ourselves out of our little ant-like human vision of what's immediately in front of us and be able to see the vast vistas that are possible for us.
Yeah, the image that comes to mind for me is, and I think somebody wrote a poem about this or a short story, and I just love the image, said, imagine a caterpillar crawling across an oriental rug, you know, a design rug. And now the caterpillar comes back as the butterfly flies over the same rug and sees the pattern that it had been crawling across as a caterpillar. It only thought it was just encountering blocks of color, and now it sees the drawing together of what this was all meant to be.
And that's a beautiful image. Yeah.
Yeah, to me it's like your imagination soaring allows that. And I also think of the book, I can't think of the author now, but Think and Grow Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, to me, I always wondered what that book was about. And he kept saying, well, you know, the idea and the secret is right in front of you, and I could never get that.
Yeah, and it's all about vision. It's all about vision.
Having the dream.
Right. Yes, having the dream. Mm-hmm. Shamans say we must dream a new dream.
Mm.
And there are indigenous shamans, and there are also contemporary, you know, shamans who get together to dream new dreams and hold those dreams for the rest of humanity.
Mm.
Very, very important because it shifts the energy.
What keeps amazing me and kind of coming up for me over and over again is that the deeper I go into my spiritual journey, the more I realize that none of this stuff is difficult. Most of this stuff is we were so like head and shoulders connected to it as children.
Mm-hmm.
And we just never realized how richly blessed we already were. And then the adult energies shut it all down because it just didn't seem needed, necessary. It was superfluous. And now I just find that feeling vibrations in my fingers or feeling real joy in my belly can be such a deep and powerful experience. And that, I think, opens me up to this next, you know, level of wanting to see angels and allowing that kind of visual contact to be made present. And the less that we fear and the more that we hold love, joy, and compassion in our hearts, the more that we are opening ourselves up automatically
to this. Yeah. Yeah.
And I love that image that you brought forth of this blossoming energy of the relaxing into, as opposed to warrior and toughing myself into climbing up that hill with all the, you know, strong muscular leg muscles to do it, instead of floating up the hill.
Exactly. You know?
Being drawn by the light and feeling it pull me and just needing to run faster.
Well, and you know, in some of the great wisdom traditions of the world, the image of that flower blossoming is very prevalent.
The lotus.
Yeah. And also in the Caro people in the Andes in Peru, the shamans wear these beautifully colorful embroidered hats with big colorful pom-poms on the top.
Right. I've seen those.
And when you ask, well, what is this all about? It's, well, you are like a flower and you are to blossom. And so that's why they're running around the mountains with these gorgeous hats with colored pom-poms on the top, because it's to remind them to blossom like a flower. In Tibet, the monks, the robes that they have to keep them warm in the meditation halls, because there's no central heating or anything, the robes are that beautiful maroon with gold leaves all around the neck, so that when the monk puts it around their shoulders, when they go to sit and meditate in the meditation hall, their head is the center of the flower, and then there are the gold petals and the maroon. And, you know, when they leave the hall, they leave all their robes there, and it's like the little flowers waiting for the power that's in the middle of the flowers to come in during meditation time. But it's all about blossoming.
Wow.
I know. Isn't that wonderful? So for people who are listening, the image of you are a flower, blossom. Blossom with freedom, with joy, knowing you are safe and loved by the universe. Blossom in all your glory for the pure joy of blossoming. And the beautiful scents that you give off, just like a flower, the beautiful colors of who you are, will be of great benefit to others.
And the thing that I find so interesting is that that is so spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
We don't call that in our minds in this categorized kind of society and cultures that we're in. We don't see that as spirituality. We see spirituality as going into this chamber, into this cave, into this, you know, stone room, and doing these certain ceremonies with these specific symbols. And we forget what, I mean, ancient wisdom has taught us is that these simple truths of becoming the flower are so important. I know that Eckhart Tolle, in his latest book, talks about, in the first 5 pages of that book, he says, do you know how long plants have been on this planet?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, do you know how much of a miracle it was for a plant to create a flower and blossom? Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because I'm actually in the middle of writing a book about the mystical power in flowers and how it can really help us elevate our energetics and elevate our consciousness.
And I was just reading in the Globe today that there are kids now that are taking these plants, salvia.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a certain salvia something or other. Latin name.
That's a hallucinogen. Yeah.
That can become hallucinogenic.
Yeah.
That can bring you closer to your God self.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, we're putting that against the law now because kids are abusing
right.
that.
Well, apparently it's a very short high, a short, intense hallucination.
But the energy of the plant realm, the plant kingdom, and you're talking also about the elemental spirits and the element, you know, and I wish you would talk a little bit more about that, how this tree that when you were a child, you had this, I don't know if you had conversations with that tree or you were just talking to that tree or that tree in some way was guiding you.
That particular tree when I was little, I was more honoring it because it was just so magnificent and the energy of it was, and it was on a path that I used to walk. And so I've had many conversations with trees since then. And some of the older trees have such incredible wisdom. And for any person, a tree, because it's got the roots and it reaches towards the heavens, that may seem simplistic to some people, but the profound wisdom of that. If you go and lean against a tree and ask the spirit of the tree to teach you something, you're going to learn. And people may think, oh, I'm just making this up. And I always say, just let whatever comes in your mind be there and just pay attention to it. Don't analyze it. You can analyze it later. Just be in the experience.
Mm-hmm.
We say the same thing to people when they're learning to journey. Of course, there's the analytical part of your mind that's going to say, I'm making this up. You were mentioning this earlier, and this can't be true. We always say, you know, just check that part of your mind outside in the hall and say, we'll talk later. I want to just be fully in the experience. Because when you allow yourself to be fully in that non-rational, non-logical experience, you open up the rest of your sensibilities to profound wisdom that's blocked if you're just going to be rigidly in the what we think is a linear mind.
Mm. Which brings me to the... When you talk about the Buddha, I mean, the Buddha sat under the Bodhi tree. That is where he sat and had his experience of enlightenment, of becoming what, when people said, who are you? Because you're so radiant.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I am the Buddha, which means I am awake.
Mm-hmm.
His name is not Mr. Buddha.
Right. He said, I'm awake.
I'm awake. That's who I am.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like Amici, the saint from India, who was just in Massachusetts last week.
Mm-hmm.
She woke up in this lifetime when she was born, fully awake and aware. She was born fully awake, knowing completely who she is, which is simply a physical manifestation of the divine. And one of her reasons for being on this planet, if I may presume to speak for her, is to help all of us remember that we have the exact same energy.
Mm.
We all, too, are physical manifestations of the divine.
Mm. Mm. No, absolutely. And I'm really glad that you talked about the tree energy, too, and for each person to be able to just rest against a tree and ask it for the gift it has to give you or the wisdom it has to share. As well as that whole energy of flower and blossoming. Those are so powerful.
Well, you know, we're put here on this planet, which is really a beautiful garden. If you can get out, if you can remember that we've put the cement here.
Mm-hmm.
The way that this started out is just one enormous, magnificent garden.
Mm.
And one of the, like the logo of an organization called United Plant Savers has a picture of a tree with a man sitting against it saying, listen and we will teach you. And that is a very profound message for all of us because nature will teach us.
Thank you so much, Leontine
You're
Hartzell,
so welcome.
For being my guest today on Planetary Spirit. This has been wonderful.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I enjoyed being here.
And Leontine Hartzell has studied shamanism with indigenous native as well as contemporary shamans, the likes of Michael Harner, Sandra Ingerman, and Tom Cowan. And Leontine has taught workshops for the past 25 years and currently teaches workshops to children, teens, and adults on shamanism, Reiki, creativity, as well as meditation. And her website is eyeofeagle.org. That's eyeofeagle.org. And if you're enjoying this program and would like to download past interviews, go to our website at www.planetary-spirit.com for on-demand archives of our past shows. And so this is Jeff Ferranini, saying, have a blessed day.